Today, sharing the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Kiddushin. We're already on the bottom of Chav Ches Amud Aleph, and the near to Hashem, we will do Chav Ches Amud Beis and all of Chav Tes today, and this way we'll have made up an entire Daf for the first day of Rosh Hashanah that you won't be able to listen online. Okay, so we begin the Mishnah towards the bottom of Chav Ches Amud Aleph. Kol Hanaseh Domim Bi'acher. When something is used for chalipin, for an exchange, and it's being used essentially as payment for something else, that's akin in chalipin. You're using item A to acquire item B, so there's an exchange taking place, so it's being used essentially as the money. Item A is the, quote, money that is purchasing item B. So kivan shezocha zeh, nischayev zeh b'chalipav. As soon as one person, let's say Shimon, takes the item from Reuven, at that moment that Shimon took the item from Reuven, the item that Reuven had is transferred over to Shimon, but simultaneously the item that Shimon had is transferred over to Reuven. That's a kinyan chalipin. So the Mishnah tells us, kol ha'naseh domim bi'acher, it's basically used, item A is being used as a payment for item B, so kivan shezocha zeh, when Shimon takes item A, and then at that point in time, nischayev zeh b'chalipav, the item that Shimon had, item B, now goes to Reuven. Now, there'll be three different interpretations of this in the Gemara, so that's all I'll say for now. Because the Mishnah now says, Ketzad, exactly how does this work? So it gives us an example. Hechlif shor bipara. If Reuven has a shor and he's exchanging it for Shimon's para, so exchanging an ox for a cow, or vice versa, o chamor or a donkey bishor for a ox, doesn't make a difference what the two items are, two different animals, you're exchanging one for the other, so kivin shezocha zeh, nischayev zeh b'chalipav. In the case that we said, he's exchanging an ox for a cow, so as soon as the ox is given over, the cow now belongs to the person who originally had the ox. Or, in the case of the donkey and the shor, the donkey is given over, so now the shor becomes his, the original owner of the donkey, now is the owner of the shor, just with the transfer of one of the items, you don't need to transfer both of them. This is called the kinyan chalipin, and as I said, there'll be three interpretations of this, and we'll start right now with the Gemara. Chalipin, my ninu. What are we talking about over here, this kinyan chalipin? So, the first opinion is that we're dealing here with a matbeya, that item A that we were referring to was a coin. Now, he wasn't purchasing with money. He wasn't using that coin as kesef, because we've already said, for example, the metalklin cannot be coined with kesef. You need to do a kinyan meshicha, or mesira, or hagbah. So you're not purchasing with the money, but you're using it as an exchange. So this matbeya that Reuven had, so Reuven is giving the matbeya to Shimon as a chalipin, and as soon as Shimon gets the coin, this matbeya, so the cow or whatever item it is that Shimon had is now automatically transferred over to Reuven. So that's what the first opinion says, that this kinyan chalipin even includes a coin, matbeya. But more questions, it says, really? Shema mino matbeya nasa chalipin? So then, based upon what you're telling us, then a matbeya would, in fact, be perfectly good to do a kinyan chalipin. However, as Rashi brings down four lines on the bottom, shema mino b'chule, he says, v'anan kaimalon b'perek hazov, we're learning more above a mitziah, the ain matbeya nasa chalipin. Then, in fact, you can use a coin for a chalipin. When the rabbi makes a kinyan suda for the ksuba with the chasen, so he doesn't use a coin. He takes a pen, he takes a handkerchief. That's why it's called the kinyan suda. He usually takes some sort of a handkerchief. Today, they'll use a cell phone, whatever it is that you're using, but you can't give him a dollar bill. You can't give him a coin and use that as a kinyan chalipin. So this implies from the way we first are learning this that a coin could be used for chalipin, but the Gemara in Bava Metzia and Perek Hazav says you can't. So that can't be the right understanding. So Gemara says you're right. Amar of Yehuda, Hochi Komar. This is what our Mishnah is telling us. Kol ha'nishom domim bi'acher, something that is being evaluated and used as money to purchase the other item. So Reuven's cow is being evaluated as being worth $1,000 to go and purchase the ox of Shimon. So you're using it as money. Kol ha'nishom domim bi'acher, and we turn to Chav Ches Amud Beis. In this situation, kivan shezocho zeh, as soon as the Shimon, the second person, has taken possession of that item that was evaluated to be like money, so nischayev b'chalipin. So the other item that Shimon had, the ox, automatically goes over to Reuven. And I'll show you that this is the correct understanding. We're not talking about a matbeya. We're talking about exchanging of one cow, let's say, for an ox, or a donkey for an ox. So daikonami, I'll show you this is right. Look at the words of the Mishnah. Diktani, it said, keitzad. And then it said, hechlif shor bipara, o chamor bishar. It didn't say exchange a coin for the ox or exchange a coin for the donkey. It said, no, I'm exchanging the shor, the ox, for the cow, or I'm exchanging the chamar, the donkey, for the shor, for the ox. And therefore, that clearly is what the Mishnah means, shmamina. That's a good understanding, and this is teretz number one, how to understand the Mishnah. Gemara says, but the way you originally wanted to understand it, that it was a matbeya, how does it work according to that opinion? How would you understand the Mishnah according to the original way that we wanted to, that in fact the matbeya can be used for chalipin, not like the Gemara in Hazahav, but it seemed to imply, Shema Minah, that you could in fact use a coin to be not as kesef, but as a chalipin, using the coin as the sudar, as the kerchief. According to that, how would you understand ketzad? What does it mean then when it said ketzad? It didn't give us an example of a coin. It gave us, as we said, the example of hechlev shor bepara or chamor bishar. So hachikomar. So this is what the Gemara says. We were talking about a coin, but then it gave us peiros nami of the chalipin. Not only can a coin be, but even peiros, something that's not a utensil, something that's not a vessel, can also be used for chalipin. Ketzad, and what would be an example of that? Hechlif bisar shor bepora. It's as if it had said, I'm exchanging the basar of this shor, the meat of this shor, for that cow, or basar chamor, or the meat of the donkey, bishor, for that shor. And in this situation, these are called peiros. So kivin shazor chazeh, and even with peiros, it doesn't have to be a kli, it doesn't have to be a vessel or utensil, but even with peiros, just such as the animals, so they would also be allowed to be a valid kinyan chalipin. Nishayev b'chalipin, as soon as you gave over one for the other, so then the other one comes along back. That is the kinyan chalip. It works over here even with the, quote, peiros, which is like the besor shor or the besor chamor. Now, that's the way you would learn it if you had this as a coin. The Gemara says, that only works, however, whether you're talking about the first teretz that we gave, that we're dealing over here with something that's evaluated as money, or even like we originally thought, which is now the second teretz that we're giving, that it's talking about a matbeya and peiros, so this only works out well. Hanichal Rav Sheshes, d'yom ha-peiros avdi chalipin. This only can be understood with the understanding of Rav Sheshes that, in fact, you can use peiros for chalipin. So whether you hold like the first teretz or the second teretz, you're using an animal to go and exchange for another animal. So Rav Sheshes says that that's fine. However, Elo Rav Nachman, we got a problem because Rav Nachman holds Yom Peros lo avdei chalipin ma'ikalem emer. So then, neither teretz number one nor teretz number two over here is a valid teretz because both of them require an animal to be used as chalipin. So that works out only according to Rav Sheshes that an animal can be used for chalipin. But according to Rav Nachman, where an animal can't be used for chalipin, how do you understand our Mishnah? So now we have a third understanding of a Mishnah. Hachikama, this is where you have to understand the Mishnah. Yesh domim shehein kechalipin. That there are certain types of payments, domim, money, that are like chalipin. What do we mean by that? Ketzad. Hechlif demei shor bipara. If you're using the evaluation of the shor as money to exchange it for a para. So the para is worth $1,000. So Ruve owes Shimon $1,000. He did a meshicha on the para of Shimon. He now owes him $1,000. Now, he says, listen, how would you like to have my shor, which is worth $1,000 instead? So, in that situation, or odmei chamor bishor, or how would you like to have my donkey, which is worth $1,000, instead of the payment of the $1,000 that I owe you for your shor? So, in this situation, that is a valid chalipin. So, that's how you would learn it if you hold like Rav Nachman, that peiros aren't good for chalipin, but here using the value of that behemah, and that is able to be used for chalipin. Why? My timer. Because Rav Nachman holds Savalok Rav Yochanan, which we had machlokes previously in the Shiurim between Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish as to whether Mos are Kone Midarais or not. Rav Yochanan says, yes, Kesef can be Kone Mitaltlin, and it's only Exer Rabbanim, which we'll remind ourselves about in a moment, that Rav Yochanan says that we don't allow the Din Darais to take effect. According to Rish Lakish, he doesn't say that Kesef can acquire Mitaltlin, so therefore he doesn't have this whole idea. We'll explain Rish Lakish in a moment. But right now we're saying that Rav Nachman, my time, must saw the look of Rav Yochanan. He was like Rav Yochanan, and then in fact, Mo's, Domar Dvar Torah, Mo's Konos, that on the Torah level, on the Raisa level, you can acquire Metaltalin with money. Umatam Amru Mashicha Konet. Why did the rabbis change that around? The rabbis made a gzera, as we pointed out in the previous shurim, and here we see it inside, that the rabbis made a gzera that a Kenyan Mashicha is required, or Mesira or Akbar, and we do not allow the money to go and effectuate the purchase of the metalplin. Why not? Umatam omru mashicha kone, because the gezerah, the rabbis instituted a takan over here. You know what's going to happen? I have wheat in my silo, and you give me money for it. Now the wheat belongs to you. Shema yoma lo, since the person then who owns the silo will say, hey, there was a fire there. I didn't bother myself to go and put it out because it wasn't my wheat. So nisifu chitecha balia, your wheat got burned up. In order to prevent this, the rabbi said, guess what? It's still considered your wheat until you actually give it to him. And therefore, you'll be spurred to go and save the wheat from the fire. Therefore, That's when the rabbis made a gzera that money doesn't work. Dvar Torah, Mos Konos, it would have worked, but the rabbis made a gzera. So when did the rabbis make a gzera? The rabbis make a gzera, milsu the shriach, the gozu bel rabban. Something that's common, a milsu the shriach. So the rabbis make gzeras for things that are common. So it's very common that people will go and purchase with actual money something else. However, to say I'm using the valuation of this shor that's worth $1,000 to go pay for the chamor or vice versa, so that's very uncommon. Milsu de lo shriach, therefore lo gazu barabanan, and the rabbis left the din doraisa, the Torah, midvar Torah, mos konos, and therefore in this situation the valuation of the shor for the chamor or vice versa will in fact work. The rabbis left the din daraisa without making gzeira. They only make gzeira for a davar shchiach, which is with money, but not with the value of the animal being used instead of money. Now, that works out well according to Rav Yochanan, who says the din daraisa is that the Dvar Torah mos konos. Elo l'reish lakish, d'yama mishicha miforeshes min haTorah. He says that kesef is not konim min haTorah, and he learns out that in fact, mishicha must be done min haTorah, o kono miyad amisecha, we had this previously, and therefore, the din, according to Reish Lakish, is that the money doesn't effectuate the sale. You can't go and be acquiring metatlin without doing a kinyan mishicha. So how do you learn Reish Lakish then, according to Rav Nachman? So hanicha, that would be, work out great if, in fact, Rav Sheshis and Reish Lakish align. Hanicha, Yisrav, look at Reish Lakish. So if Reish Lakish holds like Rav Sheshis, then there's no problem, because then the Amar Peros Avdi Chalipin. Then the Peros themselves are able to do Chalipin, and it's not a problem over here of Kesef Kone Midaraisa, because this is a Chalipin. So obviously, Mitarev is Rav Sheshis. Reish Lakish would hold like Rav Sheshis. But how does Reish Lakish hold like Rav Nachman? Eli Yisrav, look at Rav Nachman, who says the Amar Peros Lo Avdi Chalipin, and as well Umat Be'al Lo Kani. So then, if you're holding like Reish Lakish and Rav Nachman, you got a problem. But my Mokila, how could you possibly learn that this exchange would occur in our Mishnah? So the word says you're right, you can't, because he holds that Min haTorah Mos are not Konos, and he holds that you can't use Peros for Chalipin. So then he has no way left to learn like Rav Nachman. So therefore, you're forced to say Al Karcha Ki Rav Sheshis Svirulei, that the only way that Reish Lakish could learn is like the Shita of Rav Sheshis, and he can't learn like the Shita of Rav Nachman. Okay, next Mishnah. Continuing our different kinyonim, so it says Rishus Hagavoa BeKesef, that when Hekdish acquires something, it can acquire something with money. Bein L'Rav Yochanan, Bein L'Reish Lakish. According to Rav Yochanan, so it acquires the Dvar Torah Mos Konos anyway for everybody, and it was only the rabbis that made a takana. The rabbis only made the takana in regards to regular people, hedyotos, but not in regards to hektish. So hektish still can be konos something with kesef. According to Reish Lakish, that you need to do o konu miyada misecha, you need mishicha, and hektish should therefore have to do mishicha. So the answer is going to Reish Lakish that no, only between hedyotos do we have this pasuk o konu miyada misecha, but hektish can acquire Min haTorah, even according to Reish Lakish, for Metaltlin. So, Rishus HaGavoa BeKesef. So, according to both Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, a Hekdish, the Gizbar, can acquire something just by paying money for it, as we'll see in a moment. Or Rishus HaJot BeChazaka, as opposed to a private person has to make a Chazaka. Now, here, the word Chazaka is used in a funny way. It doesn't mean a Chazaka like we've been talking about till now, but as Rashi says, it means BeChazaka BeMeshicha, or Mesiro HaGba. Like Rashi holds that if you can do Mashiach, you certainly can do Masira, and you certainly can do Hagbah. So a private person, when he's acquiring Metaltalin, has to go and do Mashiach, make a Kinyan, not the technical Chazaka, but he has to make a Kinyan of Mashiach. So that's the first part of the Mishnah, that there's a difference between the Gizbar and a regular person in terms of acquiring Metaltalin. The Gizbar can acquire it with money, whereas a private person, either according to Rav Yochanan because of the Gzeira, or according to Reish Lakish, because it doesn't work, Dvar Torah Mos are not Konos according to Reish Lakish, so you have to do a Kinyan Mashiach. Now, Amariso Ligavoa, if a person declares something, just verbally says, this belongs to Hekdish, so that works for Gavoa. It works Kimisiroso Lehejot. It works as if it was actually handed over. When you hand over your Metaltin, you do a Kinyan Mashiach or Mesiro or Akbah. So then that works. So just saying something belongs to Hekdish, that will work as if it was actually handed over to Hekdish. Gemara starts off by quoting the following brayso, Tana Rabbanon, Ketzad Rishus HaGavoa BeKesef. Show me an example of how Hekdish can acquire something with money. They can acquire Metaltin with money. So for example, Gizbar, the treasury, the Hekdish, the person in charge, Shenosan Moz Bebema, he went and gave $100 to Ruvain to go buy Ruvain's cow. So Afilu Bebema B'Sofolim, even if that cow was not physically over here, it could be at the other end of the world, Kona, Hekdish has acquired that animal. the money, the ketzef, can acquire it, b'ini Rav Yochanan, b'ini Reish Lakish, as we've explained, the hektish can acquire something, the tatlin, with money, kana. However, the hedjo, but this is Reuven and Shimon, so then lo kana at shim shot. And even though Reuven gave Shimon the money, so he wouldn't have acquired the cow until he actually does a kinyan mishicha. Again, that's the difference between hektish, gavoa, and a regular hedjo, a regular person. Now, we give examples of all of this. Ketzad, I mean, Russell, Gavoa. What are examples over here where we said something in the second part of the Mishnah that just saying something, it goes over to hektish? Can we see Russell, Hedjo, as if it was handed over to a regular person, just saying it verbally gives it over to hektish. So, Omer, Shor, Zeh, Ola. If a person declares that my Shor should be an Ola, or he says, Bai Zeh, my house, hektish should be hektish, so whether the shore is here or not, whether the house is here or not, I feel himself olam, even if it's far away, it's at the other end of the world, kana, hektish has acquired this from the person who said that my shore, wherever it is an olam, my house, wherever it is, belongs to hektish. This is a valid acquisition by hektish, just with words, kana. However, behedjo, if Reuven says, listen, my shore belongs to you, Shimon, my house belongs to you, Shimon, lo kana. Shimon doesn't acquire that shor or that house until he makes either kinyan mashiach on the shor, or he makes some sort of a chazaka or a shtar on the house. And we turn to Chavtes Amud Aleph, Adshim Shoch, in regards to Rashi says to the shor until he does a kinyan mashiach, and in regards to the house, V'yachzik B'bayis, until he makes some sort of a chazaka on the house. Okay. Now, this brisa continues and says, Mishacho B'mona, what happens if a private person, a hedjot, did a kinyan mashiach from hektish? Mishacho B'mona. So let's say we're dealing here with a horse. So a person, hektish, got a horse from somebody, and now this person is buying this horse from hektish, and mishacho, he did a mashiach on it when it was only worth b'mana. The horse was worth b'mana, 100 zuz at this point in time. And then he didn't pay for it yet, below his spik lift also. He didn't actually give the money to hektish until now it went up in value. Horses went up, atcha amad b'masai. It's now worth 200 zuz, 2 mana. So how much does this person owe? On one hand, he made a kinyan mashiach. If this was between two people, so then he would only have to pay 100. But since it's with hektish, ad sha'amad b'masayim, it's now worth 200, nosim masayim, he has to go and give 200. Why is that? My taima. Because it says in the pasuk, when you're redeeming something from hektish, v'nosana kesef become lo. It's only with the giving of the money that it becomes yours. So here, even though he did a kinyan mashiach, it's not fully his until he pays the money. And since it went up in price, he has to pay the higher price. What happens if it was the exact opposite? Mishacho b'masayim. At the time they did kinyan mashiach, the horse was worth 200, right? 200 zuz, 2 mana. And now, by the time he actually goes and pays for it, it went down in price. Horses went down in price. Below his big lift, doso, acha amai b'mana. So it's now only worth 100 zuz, 1 mana. So how much does he have to pay? If this was with a regular person, we would say, well, listen, you did the kinyan mashiach at 200, you have to go pay 200. So here too, maybe we should say, since you didn't acquire it yet, maybe you should only have to pay 100. Or do we say, no, here too, just like with the private person, you have to pay the 200. So here too, you have to pay 200. So the Gemara, the Brice of Paskins, no same Messiah, he has to give 200. Now, why? My time up, what's the rationale over here? Because lo yekoach hedjot, chomim mihektish. Because the private person, you would have to pay 200 because the kinyan mashiach works. So we don't want hektish to be worse off than the private person. So just like with a private person, you have to pay 200. So tovia, for the hektish, you have to pay 200. Even though one can make the argument that it should really only be become lo, only at the time that you go and actually give him the money. V'nos ha'nakesa become lo. So one might have said, well, maybe you only have to pay 100. So the answer is no, you have to pay 200. The price continues and says, Pido b'masayim. What happens if he paid the $200 for it, but he didn't yet do a kinyan mashiach? So he paid $200 for this horse, the 200 zuz, the masayim zuz, the low hispik motion. He didn't do a kinyan mashiach. Acha amad b'mana. Now it's only worth 100. So maybe he only has to pay 100 now. He should get 100 back. So Gemara says, no, no same masayim. The price says he has to pay 200 for it. Why is that? Again, my timer, because when asana kesef become low, at the moment that he gave the masayim, the 200 zuz, the 200 dinarim, the 2 mana, so at that moment in time, it became his. So the fact that it went down in price later on, big deal. That doesn't affect you. It's already yours, and therefore, you have to pay the 200. No sin masayim, you don't get anything back. Well, again, my time up, because v'nos ha'nakesef become lo. At the time that you gave the 200, that's when it becomes yours, as based upon the pasuk, and therefore, even though it's now worth less, and now you're making the kinyan mashiach to really bring it into your ownership, nevertheless, since you paid the 200, that's when it became yours, therefore, you still have to pay the 200. You don't get anything back. But what happens, pido b'mana? Here, you redeemed it for a mana. You gave 100 zuz, 100 dinar. And below his speak the moshe, you didn't yet do the kinyan mashiach, and now went up in price. Acha amad b'masayim. So we say over here, masha pada padui, they no sin el mana. Here, we say hektish doesn't get the extra 100. Here, hektish just got the 100 that you gave, because It really is yours at that point in time. I think where it says, Amai, Hochanami Nema, why don't we say over here as well, Lo Ye Koach, Hedyot, Chomer Mihekdesh, by the Hedyot, until you do the Kinyan Mashiach, so it's not considered yours. So in this situation, we gave him 100, but now at the time that it's worth, that you want to do the Mashiach, it will be worth 200 from the private person, so you'd have to pay him 200. So why don't we say the same thing here for Hekdesh? So Mar says, no, this is different. Why is this different? Because even by the private person, once he gave $100 for your horse, so now, even though the horse has went up in 200, well, technically he can retract because the Kinyan Mashiach wasn't made, but then he would be over something called the Misha Parah. So a Misha Parah is a terrible thing, and if a person goes and reneges on his verbal agreement to something, even though halachically, technically he can, so you get a, quote, Misha Parah. Misha Parah, Dor HaMabel, or Misha Parah, the Dor HaFlaga, the one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's going to pay back the Dor HaMabel for what they did, pay back the Dor HaFlaga for what they did, so he should pay you back as well. In other words, you agreed to buy this horse for 100. Now, this horse is now worth 200, so you tell him, no, either pay me 200 or I'm not agreeing to sell you my horse. So that person is going to be chayav, the Misha Parah. So even by a private person, we don't say he should have to pay the 200 because that's wrong. You're over this idea of Misha Parah. So since even a private person, we would say that he'd be chayav of Misha Parah if he now charged 200 for it to set the deals off. So therefore, Hekdesh also, it's not considered that Yad Hekdesh is not going to be strong in this situation. We wouldn't say Lo Ye Koach Hedyot Chomer Mi Hekdesh because even by the Koach Hedyot, he really shouldn't be charging the 200 because of the Misha Parah. So to Hekdesh over here gives it to him for 100 and not for 200. Now we're going to another Mishnah. This Mishnah is a little bit questioned why it's over here in this parak over here where we've been dealing with various kinyanim, and here we're going to seem to digress and talk about some of the mitzvos of the father has on a son and the son has on a father. But the Shar Mitzvah Balacha brings down the Ritva to say that this is part of the father's obligation to go and marry off his son, even though he can't marry off his son like he marries off his daughter, or he has the right to go and marry her off, but he has to assist his son, so that's why the Shar Mitzvah brings down the Ritva and says that's why this is over here. Alternatively, the Shar Mitzvah Balacha brings down a beautiful idea. He says, we've been talking about Kinyanim till now, all these various Kinyanim, Meshicha, Hagbah, Mesira, Kesef, Shtar, Chazaka, and here's another type of Kinyan. This is called Kinyan Olam Haba. How does a person go and get a Kinyan for Olam Haba? Well, if you follow this Mishnah, so then you'll be acquiring yourself Olam Haba. Beautiful idea. Okay, let's start the Mishnah. It tells us, Kol Mitzvah Sabein Alo'av, any mitzvah. Now, we'll have two different ways to understand this in the Gemara. I'll have this, the final way to understand it. I'll read it now. Any mitzvah that the father is obligated to do to his son, so then only the father is anoshim chayavim, the noshim pturus, but the mother is not obligated in these mitzvos. We'll see what they are in the Gemara. The whole mitzvos are avala bein, but mitzvos that a son has to do for his father, in other words, various things that a child has to do for the parent, then that applies both to men and women. Echod anoshim, v'echod noshim chayavim, both the boys and the girls are obligated to do this for their parents. Then the Mishnah continues, the whole mitzvah says, Sei Shazman Groma, any time dependent mitzvah. This is the famous source for this whole idea that women don't have to do time dependent mitzvahs coming up on Rosh Hashanah. Women don't have to go listen to shofar. Coming up in Sukkot, women don't have to shake a lulav and esrog. However, if women wish to, they can, and it's very much the custom of women today to do so, but they're not obligated to do so because it's a time dependent mitzvah. And women are not obligated, as our Mishnah tells us, in time dependent positive mitzvahs. In all the negative mitzvahs, don't kill, don't do this, don't do that, so women are obligated except the three, which we'll see at the end of the Mishnah. So women, even if they're time dependent, so women are obligated in all the los asays, but asays, active actions that are time dependent, women are not obligated. So anoshim chayavim, anoshim turus, women are exempt. Again, teleologically speaking, we give over here the understanding, lav dafka, this is the only understanding, but we say because women are busy raising children. So if a woman had to go to Minyan, had to put on tefillin in the morning, she may not be able to. She has to feed the baby. She has to go take care of the children. And therefore, again, teleologically speaking, we give that as an answer, but that's not the answer. The answer is that the Torah tells us that, and we'll see this from Sukkim, that a mitzvah sasei man grum, but women are not obligated in. They're allowed to, with the exception of tefillin and tzitzis, to do them voluntarily, but they're not obligated to do so. So men are anoshim chayav. However, the whole mitzvah sasei shelo man grum, but a mitzvah sasei, a positive commandment that isn't time dependent, so then they apply equally to men and women. Echad anoshim v'echad anoshim chayav. Both men and women are obligated to do that. Furthermore, the whole mitzvah lo saseh, all the negative commandments, all the lo saseh, whether they're time dependent or not, ben shazman groma, ben shalo azman groma, echor anosh ve'echad anosh mechayav. Both men who are anoshim and ha-noshim and women are obligated in all the low sases with three exceptions. Chutz, with the exception of mibal tokif, mibal tashlis, the cutting off of the sideburns and the cutting off of the payas of the beard. These do not apply to women. We'll see daf lamed hey, we'll darshan this out from sukim. And likewise, a woman who is a kohen, a bas kohen, ubal titame lamesim, a woman who's a kohenes, a bas kohen, so she is allowed to go to the cemetery. There's absolutely no restriction on her on becoming tamei l'tumas meis. As opposed to a male kohen, there is a major severe restriction on becoming intentionally tamei tumas meis. So with the exception of these three things, the payas of the sideburns, the payas of the beard, and a female kohen, a kohenes, a bas kohen, who has no reason that she can't become tamei tumas meis, so all the other los hases apply equally well to men and to women. Okay, we start the Gemara. I said there are two ways to understand the Mishnah, and I gave you the final understanding, but the Gemara first starts off with an alternative understanding, which is incorrect. My kol mitzvos ha-bein ala'av. What does it mean when we say the mitzvos of the bein ala'av? So maybe you mean ilemo kol mitzvos de-mechayev bra l'ma'avid la'aba. Maybe you're talking about that it's the obligations of the son to the father. So then why the Gemara says, Noshim Pturos, why would we say that women are Pturos in Kibbut Aveim? Well, Tanya, we learned in the Brights that the Pasuk says, Ish imo v'yaviv siro. So Ish, if it had just said Ish, I would have said, Ein li'el Ish, only men are chayiv in Kibbut Aveim, in Yiras Aveim. Ish imo v'yaviv tiro. But then it says at the end of the Pasuk, Ein li'el Ish, Ish me'nayim, because it uses the end of the Pasuk, the plural loshon, tira'u. It doesn't say tira, it says tira'u. You, both of you, men and women, have to go and fear, be in awe of your mother and father. So therefore, harei kachdai, this implies women as well. So obviously, that can't be talking about the ratio of the Mishnah, kol mitzvos ha-bein ala'av, can't be talking about the obligations of the children to their parents. Ella, what must it be talking about? Amar Rav Yehuda, hachikami, this is the way you have to understand the Mishnah, like I read it, kol mitzvos ha-bein, all the obligations that a parent has to the son, hamutalos alo av lasos livno, that the father has to do for his son, that's only the father to the son, anashim chayavim, only the father is obligated for these things, which we'll see in a moment what they are, and not the mother. The anashim b'turos, women are not obligated. What are some examples of this? So we bring down the brisa. Tidin l'ha, the Tana Rabbana. These are stated in the brisa. This brisa states of the father, chayav bivno, has to do certain things for his son, and not the mother. Only the father has to go l'mulo. The father has an obligation to do the bris milah on the son. The mother doesn't have such an obligation. Of course, she's allowed to if the father's not there. Nebuch, there is no father. So then the mother can go and arrange to have the bris milah done, but she's not obligated to do this. Then Beis Din is obligated to do this, and if neither of them does it, as we'll see, so then the son himself, when he grows up, has to do a bris milah for himself, has to go arrange a bris milah for himself. So the father is obligated in bris milah, not the mother. With doso, to do a pidyon haben. The father has to do the pidyon haben, the mother doesn't have to do a pidyon haben. Ulam the Torah, the father has the obligation to teach his son Torah, or to pay for a Rebbe to teach his son Torah. The mother has no such obligation. Well, Asir Isha, the father has to assist in the son to go get married. The mother doesn't have such an obligation. And likewise, Ulalam de Umnis, the father has an obligation to teach his son a profession, to teach him to make a parnasa. The mother doesn't have such an obligation. And then the Brisa adds, V'yeshomim, there's another opinion that says, Aflo Shito B'mayim, the father has an obligation to teach his son to swim. The famous obligation everybody's familiar with, that a father has to teach his son to swim, because otherwise, Chas Hashem, the son will drown. Now, that's the brisa. Review the Omer, review the ads in the brisa. Kol she'enu melamed is b'no umnis. If you don't go teach your son a profession, melamdo listos. You're teaching him to be a thief, to teach him to be an armed robber. Really, the word says? If you don't teach your son to be a carpenter, you're teaching him to be an armed robber? Listos sokedaitot? Is that really what it means? The word says, yeah, to a certain extent. Elo ki'ilu melamdo listos. If you don't teach him a profession, how do you expect him to make a living? How do you expect him to go and buy food? So what you're essentially doing is telling him, well, I'm not teaching you a profession, go steal. So therefore, it's as if you're teaching him to steal. Now we go through this brisa and discuss how do we know each of these things is only incumbent upon the father and not incumbent upon the mother. So, lemulo minolon, where we learn that the father is obligated to go give a bris milah to his son, or to arrange to have a bris milah to his son, and not the mother. Because the Pasuk says by Avram Avinu, vayomol Avram es Yitzchak vino. It says that Avram did the bris milah to Yitzchak and not Sarah. So the verse says, and if the father doesn't do the bris milah for whatever the reason, he can't, he's not around, he passed away, he ran away, whatever. So so then, not the mother, but the Beis Din has to make sure that this child gets circumcised, because the Pasuk says, you, Beis Din, have to make sure that every male child is circumcised. The guy grew up in a place with no Beis Din, or the Beis Din didn't have a moil there, whatever the situation was. Now the kid's bar mitzvah. How do we know he has to go arrange a bris milah for himself? He has to go arrange a bris milah for himself because the pasuk says, if you are an uncircumcised male, and you didn't have a bris milah arranged for yourself, so then you're going to be chayiv kares. So the order is first the father, then the Beis Din, and then the person himself. If he didn't have a bris milah, has to do the bris milah for himself. No, how do we know the mother doesn't have to? How do we know the mother doesn't have to do the bris milah? Again, it's okay if she does arrange it, but she's not mechuyevis to do this because the pasuk says kasher tziva oso elokim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said you Avram go and be mal Yitzchak. Kasher tziva oso, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded Avram oso elokim and not oso velo oso, only to Avram and not to her, not to Sarah. Okay, that's great for Avram and Yitzchak. Ashkom yad. So that's over there by Avram and Yitzchak. How do we know Ludoris Minolan? How do we know this applies to all future generations? So we have a famous idea, Tana de Rishmol, the Linda Beis Medrash for Rishmol, Kol Malkum Shenemar Tzav. Whenever you have the term Tzav, as it says, Kasher Tziva Oso Elokim, so that implies two things. Number one, Eino Ela Zeros. It teaches you to do it with alacrity. And number two, Miyad Uludoros. It means right then and there, but also for all future generations. So where do we see this? So zeros that you should do with alacrity, you should do it with quickness. Dilsiv, Vitzav Es Yeshua, Chaskeo V'Yamseo. By Yeshua, it uses the Lashon of Tzav, and it says, do it with Chazaka, do it with strength, and do it with real omets, real great strength. So, and miyad uladoros, and then it means also for future generations. Dilsiv min hayom asher tziva Hashem v'hola ladoros echad. So we see that this lashon of tzav, based upon this other tzukin, means to do it with alacrity and to do it for all future generations. Okay, now that's the din of bris milah only for the father and not for the mother. Liftoso milah, how do you know we do a pidyon ben? Only the father, not the mother, because the pasuk says, "Dilsiv kol b'chor banecha tifteh," that you have to go and redeem all your sons. Now, if the father didn't do this redemption, so then then the person, when he gets older, has to go redeem himself. I've been at a pidyon haben of somebody who was a 40-year-old man because he never had a pidyon haben. He found out he didn't have a pidyon haben. It wasn't a kosher kohen in that situation. So therefore, he did a pidyon haben. We had a whole suda, and he did a pidyon haben when he was 40 years old. Okay. Mechayev ihu lemifrike. He has to go redeem himself. This double lashon, meaning teaching us that he has to go and redeem himself if his father didn't redeem him. No, how do we know the mother doesn't have to? Ihi, the mother. Minolo ndolo mifkida. How do we know that the mother doesn't have to do a pidyon haben? Again, nothing wrong if she helps give him the money, it helps arrange a pidyon haben, but she's not mechuyevis to do this. Because the pasuk says, dirsiv, sifdeh, which can be played on the word ti padeh, meaning over here, kol she mitzuveh liftosis atzmo, mitzuveh liftosis achayim. Anybody who is obligated to redeem himself has an obligation to go redeem others. So the father had an obligation to redeem himself if he was the firstborn, so therefore he has to go redeem his own son who's the firstborn. And anybody that doesn't have a mitzvah to go redeem themselves, i.e. a woman, there is no mitzvah of pidyon haben by a woman, so therefore eino mitzuveh liftos achayim. Therefore she has no obligation to go and redeem someone else. No, where it says, how do we know? And how do we know that a woman isn't obligated in having a pidyon haben? Where do we see that from? Because the pasuk said, they said tifteh, which can be again kol b'chor b'necha tifteh ti padeh, which teaches us kol shachayim mitzvah liftoso. If somebody is obligated to redeem you, so mitzvah liftoso sasso. Then that person has an obligation to redeem himself. Kol she'ein achayim mitzvah liftoso, so ein mitzvah liftoso sasso. But if there is no obligation that others should redeem you, so then there is no mitzvah to redeem yourself. Now, this is circular reasoning. We're saying the woman's not obligated to redeem herself because other people aren't obligated to redeem her. And she's not obligated to redeem other people because she's not obligated to redeem herself. So what's going on over here? So it says, Uminayin shein achir mitzuvim liftosa. Here we have to bring a pasuk. How do we know that other people aren't required to go and redeem her? Because the pasuk says, the Amakra, kol b'chor banecha tifdeh. That in this situation it says, kol b'chor banecha tifdeh, banecha v'lo b'nosecha, your sons and not your daughters. Now, Tosos brings down in Oso, below Oso, and this really is on Bris Milah, but in the stomach, the same idea goes by Pidyon Haben. Why don't we say over here that this is a Mrs. Seisha's Man Groma, and that's why women aren't obligated in it. So the Tosos Rid brings down that the Hechsher Mitzvah, all the other preparations and arrangements, are not Zman Groma, and therefore a woman wouldn't be potter based upon Zman Groma. The Ran brings down that Zman Groma doesn't apply to other people. It only applies when it's on yourself. So therefore, this is the bris is on the son. So therefore, you can't say the argument is that it's an instance of Zman Groma because it's on somebody else. And the Rishash brings down that the child can have the bris milah, albeit it should be on the eighth day. But if you didn't do it on the eighth day, you do it the rest of their life. Therefore, it's not technically a Zman Groma. Same thing would apply for all of these to Pidgin Haben. Mark continues says, Tana Rabban, we learn the following Brayso. So if a man has to redeem himself, his father never redeemed him. Who lived those? However, Uvno lived those. He also has a son that he has to redeem. Mazel Tov. Now it's the redemption is upon himself and upon his son. So who should he do first? So who called him Uvno? Tana Kama, the Brayso says that he should redeem himself first because that's a mitzvah upon yourself. So you redeem yourself first and then you redeem your son. The nafkamina would be if you only had five silver dollars. If you only had the five silver coins, so then you can only redeem one. So the Tana Kama would say you redeem yourself first and then you redeem your son. Reb Yehuda disagrees. Reb Yehuda Omer, no, but no kodmo. Your son comes first. Interesting. He says, why? Shezem mitzvah so al aviv, that his own redemption was his father's responsibility, and only because his father didn't do it is he responsible to do it for himself. But his son, that's his direct responsibility. Shezem mitzvah b'no olav. So therefore, Reb Yehuda says you redeem the son first, and then you redeem yourself. Amar Reb Yirmiyah, Reb Yirmiyah says, Hakol modim return to Chavtes Amud Beis. Everybody's in agreement, both Reb Yehuda and the Tana Kama. They call Hechad Deleko Elo Chomei Shlom. If you only had the five Shlom, if you only had the five silver coins, so then in that situation, who called them though? Everybody would agree, according to Reb Yirmiyah, even Reb Yehuda, that the father comes first. Why? My time up. As we said, Mitzvah Degufe Adifa, because that mitzvah is on himself. So he has to go take care of himself first, and only afterwards take care of the mitzvah on his son. Key plegi, the argument is whether you redeem yourself first or you redeem your son first in a situation where hecha de'ika chomesh mishubadim v'chomesh mechorin. Now, the way Rashi understands this, Tosas has a different way of understanding it, so we'll leave Tosas aside, but Rashi understands this, that we're dealing here with a person who had sold a field, but before his son was born. So therefore, he never had a pidyon haben, and this field was technically mishubad to the kohen for the pidyon haben. As opposed to his son, the field wasn't mishubad. So in this situation, keep lige hechadik chomesh mishubad v'chomesh minichorin. Review the sava. Review the holds milva d'chsiv b'torah that this obligation to go and redeem your son for the five slum. So it's as if the kohen is given a shtar that he has that the minute you're born. So milva d'chsiv b'torah kichsuv b'shtar dami. It's like a shtar, and therefore when you sold your field after your birth, after you're 30 days old, you sold it as an adult, so therefore the chi of a pidyon ben was on you, and it's like a milvah d'chsiv b'torah. And therefore the Kohen has the right to go and collect it from nechos and mishubadim. So Reb Yehuda says, take the five slum that you do have, go redeem your son. Now, you have no money left. The Kohen can go and take that field that you had sold and go and take that as lien property, so to say, on the milvah d'chsiv b'torah, the pidyon ben. So Bahani Chomesh Parak Lebrei. So the five coins that he has, if Yehuda says, go redeem your son. And then the coin can go and take, Ba'azul coin, the Tarif Le'el Chomesh Mishubadim Lididei. And he takes that field that you had sold and takes five slime from that for your redemption. So this way, if Yehuda says, you'll be able to do both. Now, Tosas doesn't like this for various reasons. Tosas has a whole different way of understanding this, but we'll leave it simple like Rashi. No, what are the Rabbanon hold? The Chacham and the Tanakama, the Rabbanon Sabri, no. Milva d'chsiv b'Raisa, a milva, pidyon haben, which is written in the Torah, lav kiksuv b'shtar dami. We don't look at it as a shtar, as if a shtar is written on it. And therefore, it's not something you can collect from lien property. A milva al peh, so to say, is not something you can collect from lien property because there's no way the person can know about it and he can't protect himself. So to Ovia, how is he supposed to know that you didn't have a pidyon haben? You're a 40-year-old man. He assumes you had a pidyon haben. So there's no way he knows that you didn't have a pidyon haben. And therefore, you can't go and collect from lien property. And therefore, you only have the five slime. V'hilkach, mitzvah d'gufei adif. So therefore, you go redeem yourself because that's all you can do. And mitzvah d'gufei adifa. Tanar Rabban will learn another bride, so Liftos has been no Lalos Lerego. You have a choice. You only have enough money to go and do a pidyon haben on your son, or to go Biol Lerego for Pesach, Shavuos, or Sukkos. So which one should you do? So the Tanakhama says, Polis, but no, do the pidyon haben on your son, and do the Achakach Ol Lerego. You go up to Alias Rego when you can, and you'll worry about the Korbanos. You don't have any money for them when you go up there. But you do first the pidyon haben. Reb Yehuda again disagrees. Reb Yehuda Omer, no. Ola Lerego, go do Aliyah Lerego. But Achakak Podes, no. You can do your son any time in life later on. Shazu Mitzvah Soveris, Shazu Mitzvah Shein Overis. Because Aliyah Lerego, you have to do during Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. You can't do Aliyah Lerego now. We're in Elul. So I miss going to Yerushalayim for Shavuos. I'll go now. No, doesn't work. So this is a mitzvah of Varis. So Aliyah Lerego, if you don't do it now, it's over. Where's Pidyon haben? Okay, you didn't do it on day 30. You know, you didn't do it on day 31. You didn't do it on day 32. You do it on when you're 40 years old. So you can still do that mitzvah. So it's a mitzvah that is not of Varis, and therefore do the mitzvah of Varis first. That's the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, we understand Rav Yehuda, Mishnah Rav Yehuda. He explained why. Kedama Taima, he gave us a good reason, because it's mitzvah overis versus mitzvah ain't overis. Ela Rabbanan, my Tamayo, why do the rabbis say that you should do the Pidyon HaBen first, and then if you can't go Aliyah L'Regel, you don't go Aliyah L'Regel, why not? Doesn't seem to make sense. Rav Yehuda seems to be right. So the Chacham Darshan out for the Pesukim. The Amar Kodah Pasuk says, first it says, Kol B'chor B'nechat of Deh. And then it says, V'hoda, Lo Yeruf and I Rekam. So the order is given in the Pasuk. First do Pidyon HaBen, and only then do Aliyah L'Regel. Don't come up without the Korbanos. Lo Yeruf and I Rekam. No. So if you have to do the Pidyon HaBen, you have to do the Pidyon HaBen first, and only afterwards, if you have money, then you go up to Yerushalayim and you bring the Korbanos. Tana Rabban, we learn the following braisa: Minayin shim hayulo chamisha banim mechamish nashim. If a man had five wives, and each of them gave him a firstborn son, so how do we know that he has to do a pidyon haben on all five of those sons, and not just on the firstborn of all of those five? Shechayiv livdos kulan. Everyone is a bechor to the mother, but only one of them is a bechor to him in terms of nachala. So nevertheless, he has to do a pidyon haben on all five of those that are the firstborn to the mother. Shechayiv livdos kulan. How do we know that? Tamlom, because it says, kol bechor banechat teteh. All of your bechors, you have to go be poda. When it says, apshita, of course. The din of Pidyon HaBen is Petarechem. The Petarechem told Rechmana and not Nachala. So why would you think that you don't have to do a Pidyon HaBen on each of these firstborns to each of his five wives? So the Gemara says, no, I might have said, Ma'u Dutema, Nelef Bechor Bechor Minachala. I might have said, you make a Gzeir Shabbat. It says Bechor by Pidyon HaBen. It says Bechor Inachala. So maybe the two have the same dinim. Ma'al Hala Reishis Ono. There by Bechor Linachala, it's only your firstborn of all your children, even if they're from different wives, it's only the firstborn is the Bechor L'Nachala. So to over here, I would have said, Afkan, Reishis Ono. Maybe it means only your din of Pidyon HaBen. It's only by your Reishis Ono, your firstborn, even if it's from one wife, even though you have a firstborn from another wife. No, it's only the firstborn from your first wife. So Kamash Alam, that's not the case. Kol Bechor Banecha Tivdeh. All of them have to have a Pidyon HaBen. Then the Braisa says, L'lamdo Torah, Minalon, how do we know that the father has the obligation to teach his son the Torah? So the Pasuk says, Dechsiv, L'imanetem Osam Es B'neichem. You have to go teach your son Es B'neichem Torah. And if the father didn't teach the son, so he has an obligation to go or hire himself a Rebbe later in life. He has to go teach himself, because the Pasuk says, that you have to go and study, you have to go and learn. So therefore, if your father didn't teach you, or your father didn't arrange a Rebbe for you, so you have to go do it yourself. Now that's only the father to the son. How do we know that the mother doesn't have this obligation, and likewise the obligation of teaching Torah doesn't apply to a daughter? A woman has to know dinim. She has to know what to do. She has to know kasha. She has to know taras mishpach. She has to know all the dinim that are applicable to her. But a woman has absolutely no obligation to learn about korbanos that aren't applicable to her. A woman has no obligation to learn about things that she knows. So a woman knows kashrus, so there's no chia for the chatzarit. As long as she knows it, that's all she has to do. There is no mitzvah talmud Torah by a woman. How do we know that? Where do we see that a woman doesn't have the obligation of Talmud Torah? So, because the Pasuk says, we can pronounce that as if it said, ulimaritem. In other words, kol shemitzuvel umot, anybody that's obligated to learn, then mitzuvel lame, that person has an obligation to go and teach others. The kol she'ena mitzuvel umot, ena mitzuvel lame. But if a woman doesn't have the obligation to go and learn herself, so then she is not mitzuvah to go and teach others. Now again, we'll see this is somewhat circular reasoning, and then we'll bring a pasuk to support it. So how do we know that the woman, minolan de lo mechayva l'melef nafsha? How do we know a woman isn't chayv to learn Torah? Because again, the pasuk said, this is v'limaritem, which we can play on the words, it says ulimaritem, which means, kol shalcheiru mitzvah l'lamdo, if somebody's mechuyv to teach you, so then, mitzvah l'lamid is asa, then you're obligated to learn yourself. But, the kol she'enachay mitzvah l'lamdo, so then, ein mitzvah l'lamid is asa. If nobody's obligated to teach you, then you're not obligated to teach yourself. Now again, this seems to be circular reasoning. He's saying a woman doesn't have to learn because she doesn't have to teach. And a woman doesn't have to teach because she doesn't have to learn. No. How do we know that? So the Gemara says, Uminayin, where's the source? She'enachay mitzuvim lamda. Where do we see the source that the father is not obligated to teach his daughter Torah? Because the pasuk says, D'omakra, v'limaritem osam es b'neichem. It says you have to teach your son. V'lo b'nosechem. There is no mitzvah whatsoever for the father to teach his daughter Torah. That's why, until recent times, with the start of the Beis Yaakov movement, the Sarishnir movement, the women used to learn by their mother, by their grandmother, and they would learn the practical dinim that they had to know. They were expert in those dinim, but they didn't have an obligation of Talmud Torah. Unfortunately, with the changes in the way Jewish life was, and the uproar of upheavals and enlightenments and all sorts of things, so girls today, of course, need to go to a Beis Yaakov, of course they need to go to yeshiva, of course they need to go and learn basics of Torah. They don't learn the Tzenerena by their mother and grandmother's lap like they used to. However, there is still no obligation for the women to learn Torah. They have an obligation to know what a Jewish girl, a Jewish woman needs to know in terms of her life to be able to be a good, wonderful, practicing Jewish girl, a Jewish lady. So that's what she needs to know. But again, halacha l'maisa, there is no obligation for a woman to learn Torah. She has to know dinim, but she doesn't have to learn Torah. As long as she knows those dinim, she doesn't know mitzvah to chazer them. Whereas we have a mitzvah to chazer. A man has a mitzvah to chazer. A man has a mitzvah to learn even something that's not halacha l'maisa. A man has the hagdol Torah l'adira, just to learn for the sake of learning. A woman doesn't have that obligation. Those are the facts. That's the halacha l'maisa. It's not in any way pejorative or sexist or anti-women or anti-men. Those are the halachos mid the araisa. This is the source. Talmud Rabbanan, we learn another braisa. If a man has only enough money to pay tuition for either himself to go learn in the yeshiva or his son to learn in the yeshiva, who kol ulamo? Again, Tanakhama says, you come first. Rabbi Omer, no, depends on the son. In Bino Zoriz, if your child is very, very much a Zoriz, he's very much interested, he's Mimulach, and he is a very smart child, the Tamudo Miskaim Yodo, and he learns very well, and he remembers his learning, so then in that situation, Bino Kodmo, review this says, better to have your son go and learn, and you can go support him. Rashi says, like a Yisachar Zavulin relationship, it's much better in that situation that your son go and learn rather than you. As Rashi says, if you don't have enough money to teach both you and your son, review this says, Yilmo Beno, have your son be taught. And you'll go and make a parnasa and support your son. Again, if he's going to be a better student than you, better have your son do it. That's Rav Yehuda. And we see it from the Maisa Shoya. He heard the Rav Yaakov, who was the son, Berei, the Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. He was named after his grandfather. So his father is Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, and the son was Rav Yaakov. And Rav Acha Bar Yaakov sent his son Rav Yaakov to yeshiva, Shadri Avu L'Kamei Dabai, and he sent him to learn by Abayit Mestama when he was younger. So Kiyosa, when his son Rav Yaakov came back from the yeshiva, Chazya, the father, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, saw Delohava Michadidin Shmaisa. He didn't really understand yet. Mestama, he was too young, and he wasn't able to follow the shir. So he said, listen, I can't afford to have you and me in the yeshiva. Amalei, the father said, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov said to his son Rav Yaakov, I'm a better Talmud than you. So Tuv At the Ezel Anah, you stay here until you get a little older, and I'm going to go and learn in the yeshiva right now. No, you can stay here in the store and manage the store, and I'll go and learn in the yeshiva. Okay. Shama Abaye the Kohav Yosei. So Abaye heard that the great Rav Acha Bar Yaakov was coming to the yeshiva. Now, they were plagued over here by a shade. Hava Hau Masik Be Rabbanon de Abaye. There was a masik, a shade, a demon that was damaging people in the Beis Medrash of Abaye. And this was such a powerful demon. Normally demons don't come out during the day. And normally demons don't come when a person is learning with somebody else. When there are two people there, the demons are scared. And during the day, they're scared. During the multiple people there, they're scared. But this demon, this shade, was so not afraid of anything, the chihavu aile betrayed. Even if there were two people that are learning, he would come up to them, the shade would go and be mazik them. And afilu biyumama, even during the daytime, havu mizaki, it would go and hurt people. So Abaye had a plan. Abaye told Ula Tamidim, lo leiset le inish ushpiza. When Rav Acha Bar Yaakov comes here to learn, nobody offered to host him. And therefore, he'll end up staying in the Beis Medrash. The Ben Yehuda says that Abaye was basically saying, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him to go and sleep in the Beis Medrash, I'll know that this HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan that I'm doing is a good idea. And it'll be a simon that we're doing the right thing. If he doesn't sleep in the Beis Medrash, I'll know that it wasn't a good idea. So Abaye didn't tell the Tamidim, tell him to go sleep in the Beis Medrash. He just said, don't offer him a place to stay. And then, mistama, he'll stay in the Beis Medrash. And that's exactly what happened. So the reason why Abaye did this, we knew how great Rav Acha Bar Yaakov was, and therefore he said, "Efshur the Misrachish Nisa." When this shade comes to go and damage Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, the shade will be hurt and not Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. Now, how could he do this? The obvious question everybody's probably thinking is, "Piguach Nefashos, how could you do this?" So the word "Efshur" here doesn't mean maybe, although that's often how it's translated. But we find many times in Gemara the word "Efshur" means that is definitely what will happen. Abaye knew Misrachish Nisa. Now, how could he do this? How could he rely upon a nace? So the answer was, it wasn't the nace. When you're as great as Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, it's not a nace. And the only question Abaye had over here, is this going to be menake zuchuyos from him? So Abaye figured out that if the shade just doesn't bother him, but he doesn't kill the shade, so then it's going to take off zechusim from Rav Acha ben Yaakov. But Abaye was hoping and expecting that the shade would die, the shade would leave, and therefore he was doing something for the benefit of all of Klal Yisrael, for the benefit of the entire Beis Medrash, and therefore it wouldn't even be menakeh zechuyos, it wouldn't even be deducted from his merits. And therefore Abaye said, I have hetter to do this. In any event, new Rav Acha ben Yaakov comes, nobody invites him, so all bas b'ahu bei rabbanu. So he went to sleep in the Beis Medrash. In the middle of the night, this shade comes up to him, id melei, and it appears to him as ketanina, like a serpent, like a snake, the shiva reish vase, as if it had seven heads, so it's a seven-headed snake. And he starts to daven, and call kriya de kara, every time he bows down, every time he bends, so nasar chad reish, one of the heads of this snake falls off. Next day, he wakes up, and he comes to Abaye, and he says, what did you do? You put me in this base medish with this demon over here, with this shade. Amaru lamacha, he tells Abaye the next day, if you hadn't done this to me, if a nace hadn't happened, you would have put me in grave danger. And again, I explained, the Ben Yehuda says that it really wasn't a danger at all over here. He knew, in fact, 100% that nothing would happen to him, so there was no concern of Pikuach Nefashos. The only question he had, would he be menakeh zechuyos or not? And from the fact that he was sure that the shade would be killed, so it wasn't even going to be menakeh zechuyos from him. Okay. Tana Rabbi Melan following Brisa, Lul Motor Belisa Yishuv. The man only has enough money to go and pay yeshiva tuition or to get married. What should he do? So we have two opinions. Yul Motor Yachach Yisa Isha. The first opinion says that he should better to learn Torah and only afterwards get married, because he'll be able to learn Torah without being worried about parnasa for his family. However, but if he can't go and withstand the hormonal urges of a young man and not have a wife to go and have relations with, so then Yisaisha, then go and marry a woman, and only afterwards Vachakach Yilmo Torah. Fine. Our Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Rav Yehuda said, in the name of Shmuel, Halacha, what's Halacha L'maisa? No, Seisha, first get married, Vachakach Yilmo Torah, and then go and learn Torah. In other words, get married first, and then learn Torah. Rav Yochanan disagrees. Rav Yochanan Amar, Rechayim B'Tzavaro, he'll have the Ola Parnasa on his neck, he has to go and support a wife and children, Vyasa B'Torah, how's he able to learn Torah? No. Much better to go and learn Torah first. Learn Torah in the Kollel for years before, in the Beis Medrash, before you get married, and only afterwards go get married. New. It looks like Rav Yehuda Mishul and Rav Yochanan are arguing. And the Gemara says, Lo pligi, they're not arguing. Halon v'haluhu. Rashi and Tosfos learned this in exactly opposite ways. First, let's learn Rashi. Rashi says, Halon v'haluhu. He says, B'nei Babel, the people living in Babel, Hayohochim v'gosim mishtayis satanoim Eretz Yisrael. They would travel to yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael and stay there for a while. And since they weren't at home, so therefore they weren't responsible for the upkeep of the house. Their wife would go work as a kola wife, so their father-in-law would support them, they would fall upon the tomchei tzedaka, whatever. They didn't have that obligation. So they could get married first and take care of their desire to be married, and go off and learn Torah without having the old rechayim mitzavaro, the huge yoke of supporting a family on the neck. So therefore, there would be no Seisha first, Rashi says, Da'ava below Hira. And this way they would be without Hirurim, because they have Pas V'Salo, and therefore they wouldn't have these urges, and therefore they wouldn't have Rachman L'Slan Keri, and they wouldn't have all sorts of other problems. And then they would be married, V'Achaka Holi V'Lo Mitorah, and then they go learn Torah without the old Pardosa. That's in Babel. Luhu, however, Levnei Eretz Yisrael, Shmuel saying, for you guys in Eretz Yisrael, Halom L'Mekomi, you're learning at home. So therefore, you're learning in your home territories. You're going home every night. You have to go and see the needs of your family. So if no Seisha first, you tzorchei habayis mutolon alav, you have luhu. Wow, my kids are hungry. My wife is hungry. So I have to go out and make a parnasa and not learn the Beis Medrash. That's the way Rashi understands it. The Shmuel's talking about here and there. Here, you go and get married first, because you're going to learn in Eretz Yisrael. You won't have the concerns of Parnassah directly upon you. Whereas there in Eretz Yisrael, where they have the concerns of Parnassah directly upon them, better to go first, learn, and then get married later. Tosfos has the exact opposite understanding of this. We won't go through the details, but Tosfos says, Halon v'halu, as we do in many places, Rashi and Tosfos argue about who's talking about who, and Tosfos says it's the exact opposite. Here in Babel, where, in fact, you're going to go and have to support your wife, better learn Torah first, and then come back and get married and support a wife. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, well, you're there, so not a problem. Go and get married. You can be able to support your wife, and you're able to go learn Torah as well. Now, Mishtabach le Rav Chisda le Rav Huna. Rav Chisda was speaking to Rav Huna, and he was praising bid the Rav Hamnuna about Rav Hamnuna, the Adam Galu, how a great Talmud Chacham he was, what a great person Rav Hamnuna was. No, Rav Chista was praising him to Rav Huna, so Rav Huna said, Amalei, no, next time he comes here, Kishivoa Liyadcha, when next time Rav Huna comes to this neighborhood, Havieu Liyadi, so I can meet him. I want to see this great person. No, Rav Huna comes, and next time Rav Chista brings him to Rav Huna. Kiasa, when Rav Huna comes to Rav Chista, Chasi the Loparis Sudra. Rav Huna saw that he wasn't wearing some sort of a sudar on his head. As Rashi says, Kidera Chanisuin. The custom was for the married people, Shirugilu Lachasis Rosha. They would cover up the head. So, for example, even if you wear a talis before you're married, or if you're a chazan and you're wearing on a talis, so the minig is that boys who aren't married don't wear the talis over the head. If they wear a hat, they wear their hat. They don't put the talis over the head. Whereas if they're married and they only would wear a hat covering themselves up, so they would take off the hat but put the talis over the head. So they used to do that a married person would be paris sudra. They would wear some sort of a clothing over their head. A hat, let's say. They put on this kerchief over the head. Amalei, Rav Huna saw that Rav Huna wasn't wearing this. He says, my time alone, priestess sudra. He couldn't believe that he wasn't married. So he said, why aren't you wearing the head covering that a normal married person wears? So Amalei, Rav Huna told him, I'm not yet married. The lo nisivna, I'm not married. Rav Huna turned away from him. Interestingly, the Ben Yehuda says that he didn't want to look at a Rasha. He felt that he was doing something wrong by not being married, and therefore you don't look at a Rasha. So that's why he turned away. And Amalei, he told him, don't let me see you again. Don't come in my area again until you're married. In other words, go get married. You're way too late to get married. And Rav Huna Tamei, because Rav Huna held that the optimal time for a person to get married is Domer Ben Esim Shana V'lo Nasa Isha Koyim Abaveira. If a person doesn't get married before he's 20, he's living his whole life with an Aveira. It's going to be very difficult for him, the Hirhurim and all sorts of urges, so it's going to be very difficult for him if he's not married. Better to get married when you're very young and you won't live a life of an Aveira. Gemara says, really? You're living your whole life as an Aveira? If you don't get married by your 20, Baveira Shoka Daitach? Is that really what it means? Gemara says, no, that's not what he meant. It's as if you're living a life of Aveira. Because you're not married, you're going to be thinking about things that you can't do anything about. It's going to lead to irhurim, it's going to lead to carry, it's going to lead to chas v'shalom doing all sorts of other things that are inappropriate, and therefore better to get married when you're young. Amar Rava says, they learn the same thing in the base of Rabbi Shmuel. Ad chav shana, until the person is 20 years old, Yoshev HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'netzap el yodah, masai yisa isha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is anxiously waiting. When's this guy going to get married? When is he going to get married? However, once he reaches the age of 20 and he doesn't get married, so then Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyochu says, Tepach Hatzmosov, let his bones swell up. In other words, this guy's not doing the right thing. Amar Rechisa said, Hai diodif na mi chavroi, why am I greater than all of my colleagues? The Nesivna b'shissa, because I got married when I was 16 years old. The Ben Yehuda explains over here that the Yetzirah comes into a person at the bar mitzvah when they're 13 years old. So it doesn't have a chance to make the 3 years of chazaka if you get married by 16. That we know that the person who sells a field and he has to hold on to his shtar for the first 3 years. But after 3 years, he has the raya that he says, the claim that I bought it for you and I made a chazaka on the land by being here for 3 years. So basically, if you get married before you're 16, the Yetzirah doesn't have a chance to say a taina that he has a chazaka here to be here and you can get rid of the Yetzirah. And Rav Chista said, that's because he got married at 16. We have in the Sivna B'yar Besa. If I only had gotten married at the age of 14, the Ben Yehuda explains, because that a person has to pay taxes in the city when he's lived there for more than a year. So basically, the Yetzirah is setting up shop by the age of 14 that he's already living there. So he has a right to live there because he has to pay taxes, so to say. So Rav Chista said, if only I got married before I was 14, we turn to Lamed Omer Aleph, Hava Amina L'Satan, I would have been able to tell the Satan, Gira Beinecha, arrows in your eyes. As Rashi says, Kolomar, Hayisi Mizgaribo, I'd be able to fight with the Satan better. The Satan, Hu Yetzahara, V'lo Ira Shiach Tieni, and he would be unsuccessful. If only I got married earlier, the reason why I'm successful as it is because I got married relatively early at 16, but if only I got married at 14, I'd even be more successful. Let's conclude until the two dots. Amalei Rava L'Rav Nosan Bar Ami, Rava said to Rav Nosan Rabbi, you should be very careful to hold a close watch over your son. In other words, put your hand on his neck of your son from the ages of 16 until 22. At 16, he's not too young to learn. And at 22, he's too old to learn, so to say. So do it between the ages of 16 and 22. And others say, that he didn't say 16 to 22. He said, from 18 at Esem Yabo until 24. So the optimal time to really teach your child is from 16 to 22 or 18 to 24. And this is Machlokas Tanoim, actually, Kitanoi. Because it says, the famous pasuk that we have for Mishlei, they go and train and teach and educate each child according to his potential, according to his capabilities. You don't teach everybody the same way. You don't teach everybody the same things. So this is a machlokis, what this practically translates to in terms of when's the best time to teach your child. Yehuda Rebbe Nechemya, Chadamah Mishasav Yadesim V'Tartin, Chadamah Mitamnei Srei Yadesim V'Yarboa. This machlokis that we just brought down. So one of them, we don't know which one, Rehudo and Rechemi, said the best time, you get the best value, so to say. They're not too young yet. Of course, you teach them when they're younger, but it's not going to have as much power. So between 16 and 22, that's when you really get in most of your learning. And the other one said between 18 and 24, that's really when you get in most of your learning. Before that and after that, you're not going to be as successful. Before that, they're just not mature enough to go and understand it and to really understand it well. And after that, it's too late. They're already going to, you know, rebel and say, nah, I'm not interested. And therefore, those are the optimal times to go and teach your child. With this, we conclude today's share. We, Baruch Hashem, caught up an extra daf.